I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad free. That's amazon.com/sports ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to La Liga Lowdown's Match Day 22 Recap Podcast. I'm Matt Clark, your host, and I'm joined by Sam Leveridge. And we'll see this week if he compares any Atletico players to bereaved pets. Sam, how are you?
I'm good, thank you, Matt. No bereaved pets this week, but this week has been just such a crazy week. The last 4 days I've been to 3 games and seen 15 goals, 3 of them in injury time. I mean, I'm exhausted from football, I think. Goodness, it's the international break.
Well, good job you don't leave early, isn't it? We've got some fantastic games to recap. And we're going to start with the game of the weekend, the 5-goal thriller at the Wanda Metropolitano, which you were at, Sam, as was Carla Fernandez Ariño. And you two had a chat about that game.
Carrasco tiene un motorcillo para el hombre, lo van a tener que sacar con una bombona de oxígeno. Ataca el Atlético de Madrid, ataca por la banda de Carrasco, Luis Suárez, gol de Correa. Gol, 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 del Atlético de Madrid. Gol, 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 gol de Correa. Gol, gol, gol.
There's plenty of drama at the Estadio Wanda Metropolitano on Saturday night. And I'm joined by Carla Fernandez from La Liga Lowdown, season ticket holder at Atleti. How are you feeling after that last night, Carla?
I'm feeling on a massive high. It was, I think, the win that the team needed, and I think the fans as well, because honestly, everyone, even at 0-2 down, we were all still singing. Something was going on in the crowd. I mean, there was people, literally security was having to get involved, but I think it was something we needed to all come together, and we saw that at the end of the match with the team coming to thank the fans, and a lot of the players also thanked them for pushing them towards the victory.
Yeah, I mean, how is the general reaction to that? Obviously, the first half was pretty poor from Atleti, but the second half was everything that Atleti haven't shown in the last few weeks.
Yeah, I think the first half was literally what we've seen most of the season and why it hasn't been going very well. And the second half, I think, actually my uncle said to me, he said, that is a Cholo Simeone team. And I think that's what the team hadn't been showing in a long time. I think maybe the substitutions that came on also helped that feeling of, rather than having to play extremely well, just having to go towards the victory and actually wanting it. I know, like, it's Joao Felix coming off for Felipe. That's not a normal substitution. No one in their right mind thinks that's going to help you win the match. I mean, everyone in the crowd was actually booing that sub. But I think Simeone knew what he was doing. He knew what the team needed in that moment. And as he said in a post-match interview, he said that he knew that the team could build from the back. And with Felipe back there, that we could go and get the match.
Yeah, because those subs kind of really changed the game, didn't it? I mean, was it a question of Atleti being good and the subs working, or was it also an element of Valencia fading a little bit as the game went on?
Yeah, I think especially with Atleti's first goal, I think Valencia, you could feel that they got a little bit scared. They stopped proposing what they were in the first half. And I think they, even in themselves, they felt that maybe they would concede the second goal, and then Yelme, He's not the greatest of goalkeepers, in my opinion. Technically, he's a little bit worse than Thielessen. So I think that didn't help them with their confidence, especially.
Yeah, and then with just one point, because I mean, you discussed the substitutions there and Felipe coming on for Joao Felix. I mean, What do you think is next for João Félix? Obviously, he came off and then Atleti suddenly looked a much better team. I mean, does João Félix have a future at Atletico Madrid?
I think it's a difficult one. He's only 21. I do understand that you have to have the patience, but it's almost been 3 years now as well that he's been here. How long can you wait for him to explode and give this version of himself that we saw at Benfica? Is he ever actually going to do that? Is he the player that Simeone actually wants to do that? Maybe a lot of us thought that he could be the next Griezmann, that he was going to turn him into this 100% like working player that was going to score, that was going to lead the team, but clearly he's not doing that. I think he scored 3 goals in 2021. He's just not putting the team on his back like is expected. I understand he's young. He's cost 126 million euros, and that's not his fault. It's the market. It's football nowadays. But I honestly think it's not going to work. I think Atleti probably need to sell him and buy maybe Vlahovic or just someone who Simeone will believe in and actually change the face of the team. Because I don't think João Félix is going to do that. I think he's an amazing footballer, but I don't think he's a good footballer for Atletico.
And then one other bit of controversy was that the Frente Atletico, which is the controversial right-wing ultra group that's singing the Fondo Sur at the Metropolitano, in the 60th minute they stopped singing. They all sat down and turned their backs to the pitch. And they tweeted after the game, which was deleted later on, but they said that it was because of the lack of attitude being shown by the players for the last few weeks. And so they wanted the players to be the ones to turn the game around. What was the reaction in general in the stadium to the Frente stopping the chanting and the singing?
Well, I'm not sure where that came from, to be honest, because if you come, it's second half, we're losing, we're 2-0 down, and they're all singing, no problem, and then they tell everyone to turn around. And because people, obviously, they're paying for their season ticket to come and watch football, you can't tell people to turn around and not watch their team play, no matter if you want them to or not. So I think it was a little bit of a, we're here, we're going to do this, it's up to you now if you want to sing. And I think the rest of the stadium responded really well to this because they did sing. And I think it was the rest of the stadium who helped the team get the win rather than them. And then the tweet, which obviously they deleted, I think they know they were in the wrong. And it was a bit of a silly situation, but I think they know that, and it's just a question of moving on next match and just forgetting about it.
Yeah, because I was in the Fondo Sur as well. I know you're in there as well, and everyone else around seemed to be starting their own chants and things, and the rest of the atmosphere in the stadium was really good. So, I mean, is this a turning point? I mean, the scenes after the final whistle and in the celebration for that third goal, everybody very united. We've had lots of reports this week of players not getting on, but didn't look like that when they were all partying and dancing on the final whistle. Yeah. I mean, can this be the game, the moment that changes Atletico's season?
I really hope so, especially with we've got some important matches, especially Barcelona coming up. But then we could say easier matches after that. I think if we can, obviously top four is just the goal right now. You can't look any further than that. But I do think it should be a turning point just because that it was a game that the team needed to win. You come off a Copa knockout, you come off losing I don't know how many matches in the last 2 months, 3 months. It's just something that the team really needs to change the outcome of the season. But obviously, as I said, top four is just the priority right now, so you can't really look much further than that.
Yeah, so fingers crossed for all the colchoneros out there. Thanks for joining us, Carla.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for that, guys. And it wasn't the only comeback this weekend. Both of the top two in La Liga, Real Madrid and Sevilla, were both 2-0 down at home, but neither side lost. So just 4 points, still the gap at the top between Real Madrid and Sevilla. Sam, talk us through these matches. Which was the best point from 2-0 down, and who will be the more disappointed team?
Well, I think the best point has to be for Sevilla. I mean, we talk about this, comparing the two. For me, Sevilla were the better point because Sevilla were missing so many key players from their team. I mean, loads of injuries, the African Cup of Nations, COVID, and then even injuries within the game. I mean, the new signing Corona had to go off in the first half. I mean, another big blow for Julian Lopetegui, who wasn't there himself because of COVID-19. So to go 2-0 down against Celta Vigo, who I'd say are a much better team than Elche for Real Madrid. I think that makes Sevilla's result a much better result, and the manner of it as well. I mean, Sevilla got back into this game playing very, very well. Real Madrid, I would say, didn't play as well. I mean, they dominated the game. They were all over Elche. They had plenty of chances, but they never looked as likely to get back into the game as Sevilla did, I think.
Yeah, a word on Celta as well. Fantastic first half from them. Great goal from Iago Aspas once again. It did seem to fall apart for Celta a little bit when Aidu went off. And that he's been a key player for them in recent weeks. And as well as Sevilla were improving, I think that his departure was a significant turning point in that game. Do you agree?
Yeah, I think his departure was a big moment in that fixture, because I think it just kind of unsettled Celta a little bit. They looked quite comfortable up to that point. I mean, Sevilla weren't throwing everything at them, but they were certainly testing Celta, and they looked quite confident they could see it out. Obviously, Aidu went off, and kind of the uncertainty that came up from that made a few players get a little bit out of position and gave Sevilla that opportunity to kind of take advantage. And in the end, they did. I mean, Iago Aspas' goal was very good, and a very strange non-celebration, given that he was only there for a season, and I think it was four starts he had in La Liga that year. But yeah, I mean, I think Celta were good value for their point, and if Aidu had been playing the whole 90 minutes, then maybe it would have been three.
Yeah, perhaps the celebration or the non-celebration from Aspas was because Sevilla actually his favourite victims. 12 goals he scored against them, more than any other side in his career. Yeah, as for Real Madrid, a 2-2 draw. It was the first time Karim Benzema's ever missed a penalty for them. And there were three or four shouts in this game. The first one given and missed. The second one given and then overturned by VAR. And then a third one given and scored by Luka Modric. Do you think the referee was on top of this game in enough? Or was it just kind of a crazy one of those games where there were quite a few shouts?
Yeah, and of course there was the other penalty shout for the handball from Verdú, where it was kind of with his back to it. No, I think in the end, all of the decisions were the right ones. I think some of them were a little bit soft. I mean, the first penalty, for example, I think we've seen them given, we've seen them not given as well. But Real Madrid at the Bernabeu, I think you can expect most of those to go the way they did. And I don't think Elche can have really too many complaints after that. I think considering the result they were trying to see out, I was surprised that they were a bit clumsy perhaps in the box. But being bombarded by players like Vinicius and Hazard dribbling at you, I can imagine that there is going to be the odd foul.
True enough. But still a great result for Elche, who've never won away at Real Madrid, but they were so close this weekend, didn't quite do it, but still a valuable point for them in their fight against relegation. And they've really improved under Francisco. We'll talk about the bottom sides in part two, but yeah, a decent point for Elche. Speaking of good results this weekend, Real Betis continued on their march, flying towards the Champions League. A 4-1 win away at Espanyol. Sam, you spoke with Rory on the last pod about how their attacking play was, you know, just so good to watch. Perhaps the best team to watch in Spain right now. Borja this week was in on the act. Juanmi, Sergio Canales, Fekir, they're all in such good sync at the moment. Who stood out for you most in this Friday night win?
For me, I think maybe it's the obvious candidate. I'm going to say Borja Iglesias, because I mean, to go back to the club where he used to play, obviously he was getting quite a lot of stick from the Espanyol fans as well. His departure there to go and join Ruby at Betis wasn't taken particularly well by some of those in Catalonia. And so for him to kind of step up to the occasion, and especially for Betis, what really impressed me was the way that they went one goal down. And at that point, I was starting to think, oh, is this going to be one of those Betis games where they fall apart and they just never turn up? But no, they really bounced back, and I thought they were fantastic again. The attacking play was just incredible. Guido Rodriguez obviously getting in on the score sheet as well. And he's not a player who scores too often, but I think that's just Betis at the moment, is that they're so confident, and there was no way he was going to let anybody else get to that ball first as it came into the box, and he rose highest. And Borja Iglesias was just clinical with his finishing. I think it kind of reflects the confidence that they've got at the moment, and we've seen it against Alaves as well. He was on the score sheet, very impressive. And against Espanyol, even better.
Yeah, they are in real form at the moment, aren't they? And as for Espanyol, it's been a poor 2022 so far for them. Knocked out of the cup and also just losing a couple of games in the league. it seems to be a little bit of discontent among the fan base whether Vicente Moreno is the right man to push them forward. Do you get that sense as well?
Yeah, I think that question is starting to be asked. I think the win at Mestalla on New Year's Eve kind of bought him a bit more time because their away form has been terrible all season. I mean, Vicente Moreno, as a coach in La Liga, has a terrible record away from home. I think that win bought him a bit more time, but they just don't seem to be stringing things together. I think looking at their squad, they do have the players with enough quality. I mean, Adrian Barber is another player who has the quality to stand out in Primera, but he's just not been at the races at all for quite a while now. I think as an Espanyol fan, it's quite right to be getting frustrated that the coach or the team aren't getting the most out of Raúl de Tomás, Javi Puado, Adrián Barba, because these are players who can get you goals. And I think another coach might be able to do a better job of that than Vicente Moreno. But then at the same time, I mean, who's on the market? Who can Espanyol convince to come and take on that challenge? I don't think 13th is a bad performance from them at all at this point in the season, but maybe results over the last few months don't quite match up to their start to the season.
Could be an interesting few weeks ahead for them. Well, speaking of promoted sides, we'll move on to Rayo's game with Athletic. Of course, Rayo flying high, Athletic coming off the back of beating Barca in the Copa del Rey. A tremendous performance from them, missing Iker Muniain through COVID, but they became the first side to win at Vallecas this season. And they did so with another youngster, Nico Serrano, 18 years old, his first start in the league, and he scored the winning goal. So a bitter pill for ex-Athletic player Andoni Iraola to swallow. But yeah, Athletic, do you think they are on the right track to push forward in Europe, or do you think the Copa will be a distraction?
I think we'll see with that one. I mean, I think they will go all out against Real Madrid. I think Marcelino and kind of his record in the Cup as well, that's going to be the only way that he knows how to do it. But I think that will be a challengeable one. If they get past Real Madrid, then maybe they focus a bit more on the Copa than they would La Liga. But Real Madrid, so it's going to be a very tough task. And they are the one team who seem to make beating them look easy lately. And this one against Rayo, I think Rayo were the better team and had plenty more chances. But Athletic ground out the result. And that's what Athletic have been really good at lately. I was surprised at how easy they fell away in the Supercopa final, but I think maybe this Copa del Rey clash against Real Madrid will be a much tighter occasion than the Supercopa was.
Yeah, the centre-backs in particular were superb for Athletic at Vallecas. Iñigo Martínez and Dani Vivian are a really solid partnership. In fact, Athletic have never lost when Dani Vivian has played. And they like playing in green as well. It does suit them. So we'll see how they do as the season continues to progress. They seem to be getting a bit of a head of steam. And they're in the mix for Europe as well, aren't they now? So we'll see where that goes. We'll leave it there for part one. Join us again after the break, where we'll talk about the relegation battle and some more key clashes, as well as hearing from more contributors. Stay tuned.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome back to La Liga Lowdown. I'm here with Sam Leveridge, and we're now going to turn our attention to the bottom half of La Liga, the relegation battle, and other bits besides. First off, the much-improved Getafe travelled to San Sebastian to take on Real Sociedad, and Alex Brotherton watched the game, and Sam spoke to him all about that one.
Now we're going to take a look at Real Sociedad Getafe, which wasn't the most entertaining of games all weekend, ending in a 0-0 draw, but an important result for both teams. And I'm joined by Alex Brotherton from the La Liga Lowdown squad. Hi, Alex. How you doing?
Hi, Sam. Yeah, good, thanks. As you say, it wasn't, can't say it was a classic match, but yeah, it was got quite entertaining in the last 20 minutes there. So it was a decent watch, but not really the result that either side would have wanted. But a tightly fought contest up in San Sebastian, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, what do you make of Real Sociedad? Because they haven't been in the best form of late. I mean, they started very brightly. There was talk of a title challenge, and they haven't quite managed to keep that up since then.
Yeah, it has been a strange season. Obviously, they started with that with that poor result against Barcelona on the opening day, but I think that was their only defeat in the first sort of 14 games, and then. Yeah, it's been very up and down. They were quite hard to beat in the earlier part of the season going to sort of the end of November. And then, as you say, things have kind of not fallen apart, but definitely taken a turn for the worse. They had that horrendous run of four straight defeats sort of during December. They're really struggling to score goals, as I'm sure we'll come on to in a minute with this match against Getafe. But they've only scored 22 goals in 21 games this season. That's really not great, especially considering the sort of talents that they have in the attacking department of the squad. And it's just been a really frustrating season, I think, for Real Sociedad fans. And obviously, Imanol Alguacil, we saw when La Real won the Copa last year that. He's just as passionate as any Real Sociedad fan, and I'm sure he won't be happy with exactly how things are going. But they've never really got into the full sort of swing of things, it doesn't seem. And obviously they've had standout moments like during the week when they knocked Atletico Madrid out of the Copa del Rey, but they're sort of not kicking on from these big moments and getting any sort of run of form, especially in La Liga. So it's not been a great season, I don't think, but they are still in fifth place at the minute. And yeah, I mean, they probably would have, if you'd said to them at the beginning of the season, fifth place around sort of over the halfway mark, I think most Real Sociedad fans probably would have taken that, but they probably would have liked their team to be playing a bit more sort of exciting and free-flowing football. And it's just not really working out so far.
Yeah, and I was going to say on that, I mean, what would you imagine Real Sociedad fans will kind of class as a good season, because at the moment they're fifth in La Liga, they're still in the Copa del Rey, they're still in the Europa League. I mean, what do you think their focus is going to be on? Because it's hard to imagine them competing on all three fronts.
Yeah, I think, as I said, I think ideally they'd probably, the sort of top thing they could sort of aim for is probably the top four. I know last season particularly, they were up and right up there in the title race for a bit, and they started this season not too badly either. But I think, as we've seen, they are sort of lacking perhaps some of the pieces that the likes of Real Madrid and Sevilla have to really challenge for the title. But as you say, they are still fifth, and I think Real Sociedad are probably one of the sort of main benefactors of kind of how competitive that sort of just below the top of La Liga is this season, because the fact that they have only won 9 of their 21 games, but they're fifth in the table, 2 points off Atletico Madrid in fourth. So it is very much possible that they will get in the Champions League places, and if they were to snatch that fourth place from Atletico at some point, then I think Real Sociedad fans would be really happy with that. But as I said, they're not necessarily doing that by playing how they would like. And it's their general game has been quite good, really. It's just, it does seem to just be a sort of a lack of goals, a lack of clinical finishing that has been costing them. Their overall game has been, apart from that run of defeats they had about a month ago, their general game has been all right. It's just a bit of a drought in front of goal. But I think,
some talented players in there, haven't they? I mean, Alexander Isak, Alexander Sorloth, and Mikhail Rabal, and then Januzaj. I mean, they've got plenty of goal-scoring players, haven't they? I mean, what do you think is going wrong in attack for La Liga?
It's kind of hard to put your finger on, but I think if we just sort of hone in on the Getafe game today, they had chances. And particularly Alexander Isak sort of made his return today, and he came on with about 25 minutes to go, and I think it was the 91st minute he was slid through on goal, like with a wonderful through ball by David Silva, and he was bearing down on the goalkeeper David Soria, and he tried to sort of just pull off a clever little dink, but he just got it wrong, and it nearly ended up in the net because I think it was Oliveira managed to almost smash it into his own net and clearing it. But it was just the lack of clinical finishing. I think Sorloth and Isak are both exceptional talents, and they're obviously both still young, and I'm sure they'll improve as time goes on.
And just one quick word, obviously, Alex, you're a big Man City fan, so David Silva is kind of a hero for you. He's only finished a match and done the full 90 minutes once this season. I mean, what kind of a role is he having for Real Sociedad this season?
Yeah, I think it's... he's definitely got a role to play, but I think, as we're seeing, he's not... he's obviously past his best. That's obvious. He's sort of approaching the kind of twilight of his career now, and he gave his best years with Manchester City, but he definitely has a role to play, I think, in terms of probably on pitch and sort of leadership on the pitch and in the dressing room. He's not that kind of loud, brash kind of character, but he does have great leadership qualities. And there's obviously with a young squad like Real Sociedad have, there's a lot that players like Isak can learn from David Silva. And then on the pitch, but he's still got a lot of quality. As I mentioned, it was a really lovely pass to put Isak through on goal, and the striker really should have scored. But it's just these little moments of genius that he's not pulling them off as often as he did at City.
Yeah, and obviously age 36 now as well, so into his final days at the top level, but good to see him nonetheless. Thanks very much for joining us, Alex, and telling us all about Real Sociedad, and hand back over to Matt now to analyse the rest of the action.
Great stuff there from Alex and Sam. So La Real, another game without a goal at home. They've only scored 7 goals at home this season, which is the lowest in the league, which is, I guess, what he was kind of referring to there with that lacking of cutting edge. As for Getafe, another impressive result for them. They drew, of course, the reverse fixture, which I believe you were at the Coliseum, which was Michel's last game in charge. It's safe to say the mood is very different now.
Completely different. I think Getafe are really starting to kind of pull away from the bottom 3-4 teams and put some distance between themselves and the relegation zone, obviously, this weekend, starting with Oscar Rodriguez and Borja Mayoral kind of as the front two, both new arrivals, and getting off to a good start. And I think Quique Sanchez Flores has really kind of stamped his mark on this team now, and they look at least very difficult to beat. And when they can excel and stand out and play their own game, I think they're looking pretty threatening in attack as well. I mean, they've made Enes Unal and Sandro against Granada midweek. They look like Pele and Maradona almost. So maybe they're not quite that good, but Getafe are certainly improving big time. And they're one team I'll keep an eye on and see just quite how far they can go up the table before the end of the season. Obviously, Quique Sanchez Flores would have them fifth if it was since he was appointed to the league table. So let's see where they end up this season. Next season as too, I think that might be a team to watch.
Yeah, some improved performances from them. Similarly, the big game at the bottom was Saturday lunchtime at the Ciutat de Valencia between Levante and Cadiz. And it was the Amarillos who came away with a big 3 points. 2-0 victory for them. And it does feel like it felt pretty final for Levante, this defeat, didn't it? But Cadiz with an important win for Sergio.
Yeah, exactly. I think after the second goal with Ivan Alejo, and they were kind of pushing and shoving from some of the Levante players, also Luis Morales very annoyed with Alejo, a few different players involved. I think that was kind of the frustration of knowing the importance of that result. Cadiz were much improved, I thought. I think Sergio is really starting to make an impact there and just bring the team together, be a bit more compact defensively. They'll certainly have tougher tests than against Levante. But this was a big win for them, and I think Sergio's starting to get the team playing a bit better, and not the same impact as Kike Sanchez Flores at Getafe, but you can tell there's been that kind of impact with a change in routine and change in style, and that it's working for them. Levante just haven't had that with any of their managerial changes. So it's always a gamble to get rid of your coach if you're in a relegation battle, and for Cadiz, maybe it looks like it's paying off. It's still early days. For Getafe, it has paid off. For Levante, it just hasn't.
Yeah, a really disappointing result for them, and it leaves them adrift at the bottom. Another team that are starting to look in trouble are Mallorca. 3-0 defeat at La Ceramica against Villarreal. And this was a pretty lamentable game from them, and especially for Franco Russo. An own goal, conceded a penalty and was sent off. The holy trinity that you don't want. Yeah, they're starting to slide, Mallorca. I think that's 4 defeats in a row now. And they're only 2 points above the drop zone now. There's a few rumours linking Luis García Plaza with a move away. Do you think that's having an effect? Or do you just think... I mean, they haven't won a game since they won at the Wanda with that Takekubo winner. How do you assess where Mallorca are at the moment?
I think Mallorca is a very difficult one because they're... that team, there's always seems to be one of these teams in La Liga that is a team that is almost too good for Segunda but comes up into Primera, and I think their squad just isn't good enough. I mean, you look at their starting 11 at the weekend, for example, and you say how many of these players are good enough to play for another La Liga team and comfortably be in the starting lineup. I mean, Takekubo maybe, Rodrigo Bataglia, who's Alaves. I mean, that's another team that were in a relegation struggle last year. Pablo Maffeo maybe, Dani Rodriguez maybe, but that's maybe 3-4 players at most. I think Luis García is a great coach. He's done a great job at Mallorca, and the way they started the season was above expectations. So I'm not surprised that they're fading away now, but I'm not sure that a changing coach is going to help them here. I think their squad just lacks the quality, and if they are where they are now, which is just above the relegation zone at the end of the season, then they should be very, very, very happy with that, given the talent they've got available.
Mm. And they're through to the quarterfinals of the Copa as well, which they'll also be targeting as well. So, yeah, still some possible green shoots there. But yeah, this is the wrong time to be starting to lose matches in La Liga for sure. Speaking of a side which is still losing matches in La Liga, Alaves, they took on Barça in the Sunday night game. We'll be honest, this was dreadful. I think everyone that watched it would agree. Frenkie de Jong with a late winner from a nice move. Ferran Torres with the assist there on his first La Liga start back in La Liga, with Barca. Alaves probably deserved a draw. They didn't do enough to win either. But yeah, that's 4 games for Mendilibar now, 2 draws and then 2 defeats. They're still in the bottom 3 and it's looking tough for them, isn't it?
I don't know. I'm weirdly optimistic about Alaves because I think Mendilibar has had an impact and he is making things a bit tighter defensively for Alaves. And yeah, okay, 4 games, 2 draws, 2 defeats, but they have played Athletic, Real Sociedad, Real Betis and Barcelona. And so, I mean, those are 4 very difficult teams to play against. And
true,
the only team who've beaten them comfortably are Betis. I mean, Barcelona were minutes away from a draw against Real Sociedad, a draw against Athletic Club. They're not bad results in isolation. I think the concern is obviously the time is running out. Mendilibar's been pretty quick to bring in the players he wants, and they seem to be starting to gel together, and I think they just desperately need an easier run of fixtures than they've had of late to kind of be able to actually express themselves and kind of show what they can do a bit more than against these sides, where they're only ever really going to be kind of fighting for their lives and trying to hang on to get a result. But I mean, that will come. I mean, they've got Elche up next, and that will be a much easier game for them. And if they can get away with a win away at Elche, that would be a big turning point, because again, then after that, they've got Valencia, Real Madrid. I mean, the fixture list is really not kind to Alaves.
True. I'm going to put you on the spot here, though. You're optimistic, but which team are they going to drag down then? Because they're currently 19th. They're 3 points off safety. Is it Mallorca? You've said Getafe are improving, Elche are improving. Which side is going to get dragged down then?
I think Mallorca gets dragged into it. The question will be whether it's Mendilibar or Sergio who improve their teams the most. I think Alaves potentially have more potential, but I wonder if it's too little too late in for them. I mean, Mendilibar's doing a good job, but he needs to start turning those draws into wins. And if this run of fixtures, if they don't win at Elche and then suddenly it's 6, 7, 8 games that they're playing without a win under him, then it might not be a good thing for confidence.
Mm. Yes. Well, the final game of the weekend that we haven't yet mentioned was at Nuevo Los Cármenes, Granada against Osasuna. Osasuna hadn't scored away from home since October, so of course they won 2-0. And for Granada, after their unbeaten run, they lost to Getafe and now they've lost at home to Osasuna. They'd scored in every home game, so of course they didn't score here. But yeah, we'll talk about David García's performance in MVP coming up soon. But yeah, anything to say on this game?
I think it was a worrying performance from Granada in many ways. I mean, they didn't have the same kind of connection fluidity that they've had in the last few weeks. But at the same time, I think it's almost an isolated case coming so soon after that Getafe defeat, and obviously not a long time between the games either. So I think they'll just be looking to the international break, put this behind them and start again.
Yeah, speaking of tough fixtures for them, they've got Real Madrid away, Real Sociedad away, then Villarreal at home in their next three matches. So yeah, they could also get dragged down a little bit more. We shall see.
Yeah,
we shall see.
Defeats to Getafe and Osasuna don't look too bad, but follow that up with those three games and suddenly you start to sweat.
Yeah, it could be an interesting month of February for those teams. Well, that's the fix. That's the results all wrapped. Another fascinating weekend of La Liga action. It's now time for MVP. I'll let you kick off, Sam, because you were in the stadium to witness one of these performances. So kick us off with your first pick.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go with Yannick Carrasco because I think Atletico and their turnaround is worthy of a nomination. For me, what changed the game was Diego Simeone, the three substitutions he made. But the real difference was that the best player that Atletico had in that first half was Yannick Carrasco. And the best player, even after those changes, was Yannick Carrasco, because he was so liberated down the left flank and supported by Mario Hermoso in the wing-back role. He had a lot more freedom. He really got at Valencia and was kind of attacking Thierry Correa, who was having a horrible evening. And I think Carrasco, just his drive, and that he never gave up. I mean, this was a thing of the Atleti side, that a couple of the players in the first half did look frustrated, did look to have their head down a bit. But Carrasco just kept going the whole way through, and I think that was Diego Simeone kind of personified on the pitch, was Yannick Carrasco in his own way. He's not the tough tackling midfielder like Simeone was as a player, but he's the kind of Duracell bunny on the touchline that is going to be running up and down that flank the whole way through. And as he came off in injury time, you could see he could barely walk, but not through an injury, just through exhaustion. I'm not surprised.
Yeah, he put in a massive shift. My first nomination is, as we've just mentioned, David García from Osasuna. He's been talked about as a potential signing for Atleti, and he's been talked about in some circles as being a potential candidate for the Spain national team. And another performance here of really high quality. 10 duels won, 8 clearances. He scored the goal, which set them up for the win. He's scored 4 headers now. He's the top scorer for Osasuna this season. It's just another commanding performance from him. Leading by example. He's just a fantastic all-round centre-back. And for Osasuna, he is the absolute perfect defender. And you can see that Jacob Arasate really relies on him as that leader, as that kind of figure to encourage, to just get everyone around him to buy into the idea. And it paid off. on Sunday at Granada, and they'll be hoping it can continue. So he's my first pick. How about your second one?
I'm going to go for Edgar Badia, who obviously the Elche goalkeeper, who was in incredible form. I think it was seven saves he made in that first half alone against Real Madrid, and they really did throw everything they had at Elche. And Edgar Badia made some fantastic saves, a free kick from Toni Kroos, or an injury time in the first half in particular. I mean, he's had a tough season, obviously starting on the bench behind Kiko Casilla under Fran Escriba, and since he's come back into the team, he's justified his return and so much more as well. I think he's been absolutely superb, and this point, there wouldn't be a point without Edgar Badia playing the way that he did at the Bernabeu.
Absolutely, absolutely. And speaking of incredible performances, I'm going to have to go for Borja Iglesias. He backed up his brace against Alaves, as you mentioned, with another brace on Friday night back at Espanyol. Those few years ago, they were celebrating with him on the pitch as they secured European football. But of course, he left that summer, as you said, with Ruby. His first season at Betis was tough, didn't quite get the return he wanted. But this season now, he's really reaping the rewards, and he's in fine goal-scoring form at the moment. Real purple patch for the Panda. And yeah, Betis, they're still fighting on three fronts. They're top three in La Liga, in the Europa League, and of course, still with the Copa. So it's a really exciting time to be a Betis fan. They're, as we say, perhaps playing the best football in all of Spain. And yeah, Borja firing in the goals. So long may that continue. From a Betis point of view, it's now time for our moment of the weekend. And we have to start with the Bernabeu again, because of course, Paco Gento, a legend of Spanish football, legend of Real Madrid. 6 European Cups, 12 league titles, no one has won more in the history of football. And Real Madrid paid tribute to him at the start of the game. You were there as well, weren't you? It was a very emotional send-off, wasn't it?
Yeah, no, it was fantastic. And the stadium kind of erupted in chants of Gento, Gento, with no sign or indication to do that. But everyone was showing their respects, even about 15 minutes before kickoff, when they brought out the big number 11 shirt to put it on the halfway line, and there was a round of standing ovation just as this plastic shirt was being unveiled onto the centre spot. So a really touching moment. Yeah.
But I have to say that despite that, my moment of the week isn't from La Liga. It's actually from the Supercopa Femenina, because Barça continued their absolute steamroller form, winning 7-0 against Atleti. But for me, the real winner was Virginia Torrecilla. She returned to the pitch after nearly 2 years without playing after her brain tumour. And it was just a wonderful sight to see her back on the pitch. At the end of the game, the Barca players held her aloft. It was a really touching scene. So for me, she is my moment of the week, her return to action. How about you, Sam?
Yeah, with no doubt in that one. I think that was a great moment. I'm going to mention two moments quickly, kind of very contrasting. One was Eder Militao, when he scored his injury time equaliser for Real Madrid. He equalised and ran straight to the corner flag, fist pumping, jumping up and down, celebrating, turned around and then saw nobody had followed him. Every other Real Madrid player had dashed back to the central circle and was ready to get started again and try and get a third. But Militao was loving the moment and then suddenly realised and sprinted back as fast as he could. And the other moment, I think for me, there can be no debate, the best moment in La Liga this weekend was Mario Hermoso and that goal for Atletico Madrid right at the death. It's the first time this century that Atletico Madrid has scored 2 goals in injury time to turn a result around like that. And such a big moment, not just for the result this weekend, the result against Valencia, but for what it means for Diego Simeone, the squad. I mean, all the team were on the pitch hugging and dancing and applauding the fans. And I think it was exactly what Atletico Madrid needed. If they needed that punto de inflexión, that turning point in their season, it was a moment like this, and there was no better way to get it, and no better player than Mario Hermoso, who was at fault for the first Valencia goal. Been really poor lately, but kind of got himself back into the good books with that moment.
Yeah, you tweeted that he's not an Atleti player. You couldn't imagine Godin doing that, laying on the floor as the opposition go through and score. But he turned it around. He was the match winner. So Mario Hermoso sends us out this week. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you to Sam, to Carla, and to Alex for their contributions on this pod. We hope you've enjoyed it. We've got a little international break now, but there is Copa del Rey action coming in between now and the next La Liga fixtures. So stay tuned to La Liga Lowdown for that. Keep on our website as well for our latest articles coming out. And yeah, enjoy the break. Enjoy the rest of the action, whatever you watch. Thanks again for listening. Adios.
Se queda la pelota al Atlético de Madrid. ¿Cuánto queda, José Francisco?
5 minutos.
5 de los 7 que añadieron para el Atlético. Vacuña, Vacuña, Vacuña. Vacuña. ¡Gol del Atlético de Madrid! ¡Gol, gol, 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 hermoso! ¡Gol, gol, 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 gol del Atlético de Madrid! ¡Gol, gol, 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 gol! ¡Locura, locura, locura! ¡Gol, gol, 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 gol! ¡Del equipo que nunca deja de creer!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.